April 6th, POC Sangha, Arisaka Razak.
So tonight, I had said, I'm subbing, that I wanted to talk about radical inclusivity. And that is something that this center is dedicated to. We are said to be one of the most, actually we are said to be the most diverse Sangha in the country. And we have a policy that we want to include everyone. You know, we want to include people of color. We want to include those who are same gender loving, those who identify as queer. We want to include the two-spirited, the gender fluid, the gender non-conforming. We want to include the old and the young. Teen Sangha, family Sangha. We want to include everybody. And how many of you in this room would want to exclude anybody from the Sangha? Now I know we're people of color tonight, so we're just for people of color. But is there anyone here who would want to exclude any person of color from our gathering who wanted to be here in peace? Raise your hand if you want to exclude somebody. We want to be inclusive, and our wanting to be inclusive doesn't always make it so. And I want to talk really practically, but I wanted to go back to some Buddhist teachings that really come out of the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path. And so, as those who study the Dharma, whether we identify with Buddhism as our root religion, or as our spiritual practice of choice, or whether it's just one in an array of spiritual practices, we know that the first noble truth is that there is suffering. And even if the world were perfect, even if there was no oppression at all, we're subject to old age, to disease, to disability, and to death. And so the Buddha taught the first noble truth is suffering exists. Secondly, there was a cause of suffering. There was a way to end suffering. But I want to go back to the cause of suffering, the second noble truth. And in that, we look at the term dukkha, which is sometimes translated as attachment, sometimes translated as desire, sometimes translated as cravings. And what some of the teachings say is that cravings, or dukkha, are proclivity. That we have a proclivity, we have a leaning toward craving. Some of that is rooted in our biology. Once we're born, we need to eat. We need to sleep. We need love. If we don't get love as babies, we die. We need touch and attachment in order to stay alive when we're first born. But then there are other attachments. We want pleasant things. We want things to go our way. Again, that's normal at some level. We have some biological imperative. If we, by mistake, put our hand on something hot, the hand is going to jerk away. There are some biological imperatives about going after what is pleasant and what is not pleasant, because they help us keep alive. We taste something that really tastes bitter and weird and strange, and we spit it out. Some of these things happen just biologically, and that's because some of those things could be signs of something that's poisonous, something that would harm us. And we sometimes have some cravings that aren't rooted in biology. We want to have that nice dress, the most recent fashion, We want to be fit into some ideal of something. We may be born into a certain culture that has a language other than English, and we really want to be able to speak that language, but we didn't grow up hearing it. And that makes us feel sad. That feels hurtful. We want to be popular in high school. We don't want to be the one that's picked on, or in these days, the one that has something negative circulated on a Facebook page. There are a lot of things that we want. And one of the things that the Buddha's teaching, that the Dharma set teaches, is that these cravings for what we want, these turning away from having aversion to what is difficult, keeps us in a state of suffering. The term in Pali, the kalesas, are technically, we could say, unwholesome mental states. They can be called defilements, but I think I want to stay with unwholesome mental states. And the most basic of them are the triad of greed, aversion, and delusion. So most of us don't want to be greedy. We might want ice cream, but we know that we don't want, even if we do eat the whole pint of ice cream because it's there, we don't, when we got the ice cream and when it was sitting there, we didn't want to eat all of it. We knew that we just, you know, maybe half a pint, maybe a couple of scoops. We didn't want to be greedy. We might want to have the choice to buy everything in the store, but we don't want to buy, really, everything. We know that even though we live in a culture that says the person with the most toys wins at the end, we know we really can't take them with us. So I'm not going to talk so much about greed today, because I know we all can fall into a moment of greed. We want the latest device, the latest iPhone, the latest dot, dot, dot. But we're going to set aside greed. We're going to really talk a little more about aversion and a little more about delusion. And I want to talk some very specific things about our Sangha. So, most of us know that East Bay has a policy of being scent free. Now, most of us did not come up in scent free cultures. Some of us, in terms of healing tools, burn sage or copal. Some of us light incense before an ancestral altar. Many of us come from cultures that scents are part of how we heal. True. And I just was giving a lecture in a class this morning, and I always bring ground rules, and one of my ground rules is we bring truth in small t, not truth in big t, because each of us has our own truth. So it's true that many of us may come from cultures in which scents are valued, part of our cultural heritage. We feel good smelling them. And it is also true that there are people for whom scents trigger really unwholesome and perhaps life-threatening states. I've been told that in some of the discussions when East Bay was making the decision to be scent-free, some people argued that to be scent-free was to be racist, because there is so much about scent in some cultures. And yet, many people of color are allergic to various scents. About 30 years ago, I was facilitating a workshop, and I had bought, at personal expense, a whole beautiful bouquet of flowers, which we had arranged to put around the room. And of the 15 people, with two black women, one of the black women came in and was allergic to flowers. we had to take all those flowers and put them outside for the whole workshop. Some of us have heard about that in the city, there's a higher rate of asthma, and that many toxic places, toxic burning facilities, are put in inner city areas. This was certainly true in the South Bronx, where people complained for years that something was being burned, some waste from one of the hospitals was burning there all the time. And the rate of asthma was really, really high. Most of us in this room would say we want everybody to be included in this sangha, including those who have allergies to scents, and are wanting that is different from doing that. Some of us found the policy off-putting. We're averse to it. But I want to say the idea that this is a policy that personally hurts you and you're wearing a scent is a delusion. It's really a privilege. Those of us who can tolerate scents at this point in the culture, when so many pollutants enter our systems, we're the privileged ones. And those who are not so tolerant are like the canaries in the coal mines. This is what the multiple chemical sensitivities have not always, I don't think, been with us. They're with us a lot now because there are so many pollutants that we're exposed to from birth. Someone last week came up and told me that they had to leave, not last week, the last time I taught, that they had to leave the meditation center because their allergies were triggered. And that there was such a strong smell in the bathroom of cologne that they couldn't stay. So I want us to think about, you know, our use of scents. And we don't expect everybody to be perfect. You may drive in the car, ride on BART, and get exhaust films. You may come in not scented, but you may have been next to someone who'd been smoking. You may have had moxa at your acupuncturist. You know, there are many, many scents that come on us. And I have learned, I've had clothes shrink on me so much that I dry clean, even cotton, that I tend to dry clean things. And there's scent from the dry cleaners. There's even a scent from the fragrance-free soaps that I use. So I've gone into a practice, I'm lucky enough that we have a thing in the yard, a clothesline. And I now air out things. I now keep separate in a separate room some of my clothes. So we know that this is a practice, just like our meditation is a practice. We want to begin by saying, really, if you didn't know, we want you to know that our policy is to be scent-free. And we actually now have a sign. I noticed it about 2-3 weeks ago. And it says, if you come here and didn't know that we were scent free, we very lovingly and respectfully ask you to leave. And we very lovingly and respectfully ask you to come back when you are unscented. And I think there's a little thing on the website. You know, consider to be scent-free means that you have to change the detergent you wash your clothes with. It asks that you think about that. Maybe you smell, is there any scent from my detergent? It may mean if you're coming on Thursday and you're doing moxa with your acupuncturist, as I do, that we don't schedule an appointment, or that we wash, that we wrap our heads. So it's a mindfulness. I want us to, instead of thinking that, somebody's desire to be set free is taking away my privilege, my right to use something that's very culturally very important to me, to think about it instead as part of our mindfulness practice. In order to support everybody's right to live, in order to make this a safe space, I'm going to be mindful about my use of sense. And that it will be a practice, and that we'll make mistakes, we'll forget, we'll get our nails done, or something. We know that it's a practice and that we grow into that practice. And I can honestly say, I was annoyed when I first heard about it. And then I was going to have to change. I was going to have to give things up. Sometimes I came and I thought, well, I'm not going to worry about it. I'm just coming anyway. But as I thought about it, as I heard people say, I might have to go to the emergency room by ambulance, I began to think about, what am I holding on to? What privilege am I clinging to? And I want to say, so the set free is really important for us. There are many people of color who have allergies. We don't always hear about them, but they are there. And so I want to encourage us, as part of our loving kindness, as part of our empathy for others, to consider working on our being sent free in the Sangha and at the workshops that we do here. And I think this practice in which we begin to think about, what am I averse to changing? What is rubbing me the wrong way? We're all sitting here, or lying here, or being here, in a time when the politicians who are currently running this country are spewing out a doctrine of hate that impacts many of us. And I think it impacts all people of color. The ban on Muslims entering the country, the targeting of the undocumented, is just the beginning of attacks on other people of color. I think that they're going to start with who they think the country is most ready to target, and then they'll come for the rest of us. And I'm very concerned that, you know, we sit here in a sangha of people of color, but we have a lot of differences, and we don't talk about our differences. So I want us to begin to think about some of our differences and both what we cling to and what we are averse to. I think most of us in this room understood the importance of being able to say Black Lives Matter. Saying Black Lives Matter was not an erasure of saying that Asian lives matter, that disabled lives matter, that indigenous lives matter, but it was in recognition that there's a certain way that anti-black racism is held in place by many, many institutions, and that many people of color even take in anti-black racism, and that at a time that the visibility and the killing of unarmed black people was so ignored, that we really needed to say, Black Lives Matter. And I think in times to come, we're going to need to be saying, undocumented lives matter. We're living in a time and in an area where there are many sanctuary cities in the Bay Area. And I think that as we continue to be sanctuary cities, some of the Republicans really do not love California. And they will be only too glad to make an example of California and withhold funds. And as funds are withheld for one group and resources get scarce, so that money for the schools could decrease, money for the hospitals will decrease, money that may be set aside to build low-income houses so that people of color can stay in the area may decrease. And the possibility of our being pitted against one another is going to increase. A Sangha member walked out to her car, a Sangha person of color, and then realized she had left her cell phone and came back for it. And in the interim, she walks past someone, an African-American person who's very sensitive to the gentrification that is happening in Oakland. Young African-Americans who grew up in Oakland and Berkeley cannot afford to live here. Young people of every ethnicity are having trouble staying in the Bay Area because the cost of rents are so high. But this Sangha member, who's a woman, and it's dark, is walking past, hears a car door shut, and turns to look, which I would do too. I'm a woman walking in the inner city carrying a purse. I learned that it's streetwise to notice who's behind you in the street. She turns to look behind, and the person says, "If you're afraid of black people, you shouldn't be living in Oakland." So these tensions are going to arise. The fact that we're a Sangha, that we sit here in peace, that we are dedicated to inclusivity, does not mean that these issues don't arise in our neighborhoods and among us. We are going to need to be committed to every one of us in every way. We're going to get through the next couple of years. We're going to have our commitment to be inclusive of everyone, to honor everyone who's a person of color in this Sangha. And so I want us to think about, it's very easy to rub up against each other because we don't know each other's stories. In the late 60s, when I was part of the, you know, burgeoning black power movement, you know, there was some talk about, we want reparations as African Americans. We want one or two southern states. We want that, you know. That was the rhetoric of the day. And we need to be aware, all of what we call these United States was and is indigenous land. We can't make it right by cementing the wrongs done to someone else. And these stories, we're in California, there was active genocide up through the mid and late 1800s. This land is littered with the spirits, the bones, the bodies of our indigenous kin. We know, most of us, about the slavery of African Americans. We don't know about the slavery of indigenous people who lived and died and were buried in mass graves in the mission. We don't know that Native American women, if unattached to a mission in certain eras, could have been sold at auction to the miners. But we can imagine how brief and horrific that life would have been. Nowadays, we think of agriculture and the field workers as Latino. We don't know that it was Japanese and Chinese laborers who built the agricultural base of California. We buy Bing cherries. We don't know that they were developed by a Chinese person named Bing. We don't know so much about each other's history. And we need to know our histories if we are to be together as people in peace, in solidarity, in resistance. And so I'm going to ask us to take about 5 minutes. Let's get into groups of threes. So just find a threesome and find a place that you can sit. We can do this, people. Our ancestor did much, much harder things. Just turn around. You want a little bit of oral privacy so you can talk among yourselves. Who needs to find their group? Raise your hand if you're not in the group yet. Okay, so one, two, here's someone over there, three. Raise your hand if you're not in a group yet. Okay, so two there. Are you? It doesn't look like you're in a group. It looks like there's a threesome over there.
Over there.
Yeah, raise your hand. Yeah. So we're going to just take a little time. You can talk about. I want us to begin some open dialogue. So we're in the Sangha together. These are our kin. These are our siblings. So, you know, I want one question. You can talk about how did you feel when you first heard about the scent-free policy? Is it difficult for you to do that? That's a general thing, okay? I've talked a little bit. I've talked about, you know, my initial resentment about this. Another topic going a little deeper is, what do you, and again, we want to be mindful and we want to be respectful. What story of oppression have you heard about somebody not in your ethnic group? And I know that some of us hold multiple lineages and sometimes of warring people. I know that we squished Koreans and Japanese and Chinese and Filipinos and Indian people all into this category, and I haven't even listed the whole of the Asian diaspora and the Asian peoples, Cambodians, Southeast Asians, Laotians, Vietnamese. We squished them all into Asian American, and some of these peoples have hundreds of years of war. So pick a group that is outside of one of your lineages. And I want you to say, to share, this is another thing, it's a little more advanced, what oppression have you learned about some group that is not your own? And how are you working to be an ally for that? And we're going to take about a minute and a half each for this. The person with the most naked ears is going to start first. So look at your group and decide who has the most naked ears. Has everybody figured out who starts? So the first person, you can either talk about your feelings, reactions to the scent-free policy, or you can talk about what story of oppression have you heard from somebody outside of one of your groups that you identify with, and how are you working to be an ally? And we're starting.
History of Japanese and
First person, you have about 30 seconds more.
Thank you for your lecture.
The first person should finish their conversation, and the next person, who can be the person with the longest hair of the two people left, can now begin to talk. Take about 30 more seconds. Let's have the last person begin their share.
Not like some people.
Take about 30 more seconds. Finish your sentences. And I do know that you have a lot more to share. Let's just have everybody thank the people in their group. And thank yourself for your sharing and your honesty. And I will just, if we could maybe have, I don't know, yes, here's the bike. Is there anyone who would like to share? Well, let me just ask, was it informative to have this sharing among you? Yes? No?
Yes.
Okay. And is there anybody who wants to share something that they're doing to show up as an ally for others? And I'll we'll take the mic around.
I just wanted to bring up an issue that was related to the first question about consent decree from somebody who I was in conversation with a couple days ago. I mentioned we were at another Buddhist meditation place, and she was talking about how expensive going to any Buddhist teachings like Spirit Rock or other places, how it's cost inhibited for her. She's an older African-American woman. And so I said, well, you know, EBMC runs on Donna, and this is available, it's downtown Oakland, blah, blah, blah. And she mentioned that she had come here, she came here, and her response when she showed up was somebody had mentioned the policy and was just kind of almost, she felt, in her words, she said she felt attacked that she wasn't wearing and somebody was just to the point where she felt like she just wanted to leave and she hadn't come back. And I've seen it in also bigger groups where people will kind of insinuate that somebody's wearing a scent when they're not. Mm-hmm. And so I see it kind of the reverse of kind of how do you, because you don't really know where a scent is coming from.
Mm-hmm.
You can't really say, oh, you. Mm-hmm. And I've seen that though. So I just wanted to, I shared it with my group.
So are you saying that people who weren't wearing scent were accused of wearing scent?
Yes.
Thank you. And, you know, I really appreciate that because I think we do want this to be a place where people take refuge. And I want to say that there are just layers and layers of fragrance-free. I am not saying the person that you're talking about was wearing any fragrance. And I know that for me, I have had to be sensitive to. It's not the issue of wearing perfume. It really is having to take this inventory about where have my clothes been. And that even some things that say scent-free aren't. And I want to say, one of the things you can be talking about is the targeting of certain people as the people who are wearing scents, so that an African-American person could be thought of as the person wearing the scent, even though they may not be. You know, so thank you for that information. And I want to take this back because this is something that the coordinating committee is discussing. Another comment.
We don't need a mic. I have a really loud voice, but I'll use it anyway.
Can you hear me?
I think one of the things that I just do is...
Can you hold it up to your mouth?
Just for people...
Say what?
Yeah, some
people. Is people hearing it,
is it green?
Can you hear me?
It works.
Yeah.
Hold
it
to your
mouth.
Hello?
Yeah.
Hello?
Yes.
Oh, so one of the things that I do as an ally is I don't tolerate anybody talking bullshit about nobody else.
That's great.
And... I don't, you know, I try to be an ally to everyone. So if I hear somebody in the group, regardless of their ethnicity, because I've heard some horrible things from people of color about other people of color a lot, I've actually had to end relationships with people, friendships that were long-term because they could not overcome their internalized racism or projection of their oppression on other folks of color. So that's how I am on a daily basis. I try to be an ally by just challenging folks, regardless of color. And what's been coming up a lot lately is like people arguing about the whole pronouns that trans folks want to use, or people who have gender preferences, you know, like the they, for example. And that's been coming up a lot. And I feel, you know, and I feel like, so I just, so that's what I do, and I feel like if we all did that more often, it would be a good thing.
Thank you. One last comment, because I do want to respect the time, and we're a little over. And I apologize, my fault. Oh, no comments. All right. I do want to say one quick thing, which is we have heard a desire from the Sangha for more male teachers. At some point we had a lot of male teachers, and then they moved, they did other things, they started other sanghas. You know, we have some teachers in the pipeline. They will be coming. We've heard a request for more Asian teachers. That's in the pipeline, and that some of that is already happening. Please continue to communicate with us. This is your sangha. We take what you want seriously. So things that are working, things that are not working for you, we want to know. And so let's just come, we're going to take a breath together, if we can, if that's available. And we're going to make a sound, we're going to make a hum. So let's take in a breath. Hearts be open to receive what is. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Please help if you can with putting the chairs up.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.